I would like to call the September 8th, 2022 Planning and Zoning Meeting to order. Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Lowe?
Here.
Commissioner Stanton?
Here.
Commissioner Burns?
Here.
Commissioner McMahon?
Present.
I'm present. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Placer?
Here.
Commissioner Kimball? Commissioner Wilson? We have seven. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Zenner, are there any changes or additions to the meeting agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Galway Jones, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. We have a motion to approve the agenda. I'll take thumbs up approval on the agenda. Looks unanimous. Thank you. Everyone should have received a copy of the August 18, 2022 meeting minutes. Were there any changes or amendments to those minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. I'll take thumbs up approval on those minutes. 6 to approve and 1 abstention. That brings us to our first item of the evening, which is a tabling request. Case 246-2022, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of Fred Overton Development, Inc. for assignment of R1, one family dwelling, district permanent zoning upon annexation to a tract of land containing approximately 53.8 acres. The subject tract is located northwest of the terminus of Bristol Lake Parkway, east of Bearfield Road, and is north of the existing Bristol Ridge subdivision. An associated preliminary plat, case 245-2022, has been submitted, which will be concurrently reviewed with this request. A request to table this item to the October 6, 2022 Planning Commission meeting has been received. Any additional staff comments on the tabling?
As noted within the correspondence from Crockett Engineering, as well as the staff's correspondence associated with this, the request for the tabling is to address several technical issues and to process or to begin the process of developing a development agreement to go along with the subdivision components, the annexation and subdivision components. Hence, they have asked for the tabling to the October 6th meeting. It is possible that there may be a additional tabling request forthcoming on October 6th, but that is dependent upon how far we get with the development agreement content prior to having to publish for the October 6th meeting. So at this point, we have just recently met internally. We are preparing to provide correspondence back to the to Crockett Engineering as to the needs for us to begin development of that agreement. But it is a technical issue, a fully technical issue associated with why, and then the timing associated with getting all of those technical questions answered is what we believe may result in the extension. Right now, we are hopeful that the 1 month delay will allow us sufficient time to be able to resolve the outstanding matters.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Are there any questions for staff on the tabling? Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, just a question about the order of annexation and zoning and platting. We've talked about this before. Could the applicant move ahead with annexation prior to us doing our job? I mean, why is that? It seems like things, the cart is before the horse or something sometimes.
Procedurally, a recommendation of the appropriate permanent zoning must accompany the application for annexation. Requests and recommendations for the appropriate zoning are generated from this body. And that's why the process of annexation occurs after the commission has reviewed the land use specifics, which are rolled into, in essence, the council's public hearing associated with the appropriateness of annexing the property into the city. And then once that annexation public hearing has been held, which is a policy decision, the final action on actually acting on the annexation, the policy, expanding the city's corporate limits, is merged with the zoning. So in order for council to have an understanding of what is being sought, what the commission's considerations were of the permanent zoning that's within the annexation petition, we take action with the commission first, and then council takes action as part of their public hearing and merging the two at the very end.
Any additional questions for staff? If not, this is on the public agenda.
Yes, this was an advertised public hearing with the request for a tabling being presented, so those that may be present, as we have in the past, would be allowed to address the tabling component.
So if there are any public who would like to comment on the tabling action, we will open up the floor to public comment at this time. And if there are not, we will close public comment on this case. Commission discussion. Commissioner McMahon.
Commissioner Burns, did you have a question?
No, I was going to make a motion, but please go ahead.
I will make a motion. In the matter of Bristol Ridge, plat number 2, permanent zoning case 2462022, I move to table until October 6th.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
We have 7 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for tabling is supported. That moves us to our subdivisions for the evening. The case is 226-2022, a request by Brush & Associates on behalf of Thomas and Mary Mills for approval of a one-lot final plat of A, agricultural zoned property, that will require a sewer main extension to be known as Mills Estates, plat 3. The site is requesting access from Mills Drive to the north via an access easement. The 3.88-acre subject site is located on the west side of Forum Boulevard, approximately 400 feet north of Chapel Hill Road. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you stated, this is a request for a final plat. In this case, it will be a final minor plat. It's property that has not been platted previously. The site's almost 4 acres. We did send out advanced information postcards approximately August 15th to 23 surrounding property owners and homeowners associations. Kind of an aerial view of the property in question. You can see the site we're looking at doesn't have direct street frontage or direct access to a public street, but on the east side, the right of this picture is Forum. To the north is Mills Drive, and on the far south would be Chapel Hill. This is the plat in question. The only lot actually within the drawing there is the part I've highlighted. That is the lot being created. As you can see, directly north of that is 2 previously platted lots, and those 2 lots technically separate it from Mills Drive. Technically, the southern lot, which you can see that has a house on it, has a stem. It's a little hard to make out in this one, but I'll highlight that here in a second. So, again, this piece is a unplatted tract of land. It doesn't have any direct access to right-of-way, per se, in itself. I would point out that the owner of this part does own the tract on the east side, which does front on Forum. So in this case, though, with the lot they're creating, Because they don't have frontage, then they would be required to get approval of using an access easement that would go over someone else's property to provide them direct access to a public street. So in this picture, the blue area is a 30-foot wide access easement going across lot one of Mills, Mills Estates plat one. So that lot that is directly north of them actually has a stem. So it that access easement would all be located on one lot. They also own that lot, so it is all under common ownership. We did look at some other access scenarios. If you were looking to the east, because they do own that property, if you're familiar with the site, it's the grades are fairly steep, does not make for good access. Even if they were able to access to the east to Forum, Forum would not allow direct access for new residential properties because it is an arterial, and that's not permitted unless there's no other alternatives available, as determined by the director. So in this case, we did determine that they could have an access easement to provide that access to the site. We listed some of the factors there. The part of the UDC is that in context-sensitive situations, we can allow access easement, and this is kind of drawing that context of where it might be appropriate. The site itself, pretty landlocked here. We don't have access to the east, to the north, or to the north and to the east with the grades and the street type, not access there either. The lot where they need the access is owned by the same owner, so the ability to get that access easement is fairly straightforward in that case. We're not creating a large new subdivision here. This is really platting property that exists and doesn't have basically frontage right now, so we're not creating like a 10-lot subdivision using just an access easement. It had never been previously platted, so we're not trying to basically have a lot that has frontage and split basically chunks of it off with access from an easement. And just to kind of reiterate the grades, you can see a little bit on this schematic here, the grades going east, fairly prohibitive to give it access to Forum. So with all that information, because the driveway would be a significant distance, there would be IFC requirements there for a certain width and certain pavement type. Basically, it has to be concrete for fire truck access, and there'd be a turnaround, which would all be evaluated at the time when they come in for a building permit. One thing with the plat right now, it does need to have the access easement done ahead of time so it can be reflected on the plat, and that easement is still being reviewed right now. It will need to be reviewed by our legal team and recorded with the plat updated before we would move it on to the council agenda so that we can ensure the easement is in place before we actually create the lot. With all that, we are recommending approval of the Mills Estates plat 3 with the caveat that we need to get the access easement done prior to putting it on council agenda. So. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for the report, Mr. Smith. Before we move on to questions for staff, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any expertise related to this case to please share that with the commission at this time so all commissioners have the benefit of the same information on the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff? Commissioner Galway-Jones.
Yes, I was just wondering, have they also begun any kind of a zoning or rezoning? I know that wouldn't be in this case as well, but I'm just curious as to whether they've started that process.
No, they have not.
Okay. So it will remain ag, which is one residence per 2 acres?
Yes, minimum of 2.5 acre size, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The motion should require with technical adjustments because they haven't been made yet. Thank you.
Any additional questions of staff? There are none. We'll open up the floor to public comment. If anyone has any comments they would like to share in this case, you can come up to the podium, and we do need your name and address for the record. If there's no public comment on this case, we'll close public comment. Commission discussion. Commissioner McMahon.
Motion. In the matter of Mills Estates, plat 3, final plat, case number 226-2022, with technical corrections, I move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
We have 7 votes to approve.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to our 3rd item of the evening, public hearings and subdivisions. The case is case 244-2022, a request by a civil group on behalf of Charles Teeter and Donna Checkett for approval of a 2-lot consolidation plat constituting a replat of lots 19 and 20 of Grasslands Edition, Block 5, into a single legal lot. The combined parcel contains approximately 0.68 acres and is commonly addressed as 105 and 107 East Ridgely Road. The property is zoned R1, one family residential. The applicant is also seeking approval of a design adjustment from section 29-5.1 of the UDC pertaining to sidewalk construction. May we have a staff report, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. excuse me. The public info postcards were sent to 20 property owners on August 22nd. The case was also advertised on the 23rd in the Tribune, and property owner letters were sent subsequent to that. Here is an aerial perspective of the area. The grasslands we're all familiar with, I think. Stadium and Providence intersection there to the lower right-hand corner of your screen. University to the right-hand side. That's pretty much it. Just off the page here on the left would be Flat Branch Creek and the MKT Trail, which are prominent in some of these other visuals I'll give you here in a second. Here is your plat. Again, it's just a replat to combine 2 adjacent lots. There was a home on the western lot here not all that long ago. I processed a demo permit for it, I believe 6 months ago or so. In terms of the platting action, the standard easements are provided. No right-of-way is necessary at this time for Ridgely. It has a standard 50-foot right-of-way already in place. And again, you said in your summary up front, they're seeking relief from Section 29.5.1 for sidewalks. So here is a bit of a graphic showing where the sidewalk would be located. Of course, all of our design adjustments are evaluated based on the criteria in Section 29.5.2B9 specifically. We've, in previous cases, discussed Policy Resolution 4806A. However, this only applies to unimproved streets, but it could still be a basis for other considerations like a fee in lieu of construction, if that's something you're interested in pursuing. Just for your information, the estimated construction cost based on the city standard of $69 per foot for sidewalk is almost $14,000. The exact number there is $13,800. That does not take into consideration, however, some of the other impacts that we'll discuss here in a second. So the first criteria in 5.2B9 is that the design adjustment does not conflict with the provisions of the comp plan. And generally, the comp plan is seeking, a connective sidewalk network and provision of sidewalks in every location where it's possible. So that, of course, is in conflict with the comp plan. The second evaluation criteria is that there shall be no negative impacts anticipated on neighboring properties. Staff believes that is the case here. We don't anticipate any of negative consequences. The third criteria is that it won't make circulation for pedestrians and vehicular traffic more difficult or more dangerous. We don't really see an issue with that here. The neighborhood is pretty much devoid of sidewalks, and I have a graphic for that as well. And so the folks who live in this neighborhood and who traverse through the neighborhood are used to pedestrians being on the side of the street and not on a sidewalk. So this graphic depicts the existing sidewalks, and you can tell they generally focus on Providence, and then they kind of enter into the neighborhood just to a point where you're getting away from the Providence corridor. You're getting past the fraternity houses and other student type of residences. And then, of course, this northern section up here connects over to the MKT trail. And so that's the impetus for some of those sidewalk connections up there. And as you can see from the graphic, the remainder of the neighborhood is completely devoid of sidewalks. And so this won't be really out of character with anything within 150 to 200 feet to the east. And then, of course, it was, you know, more like a quarter mile to anything west, which is delineated very prominently by the trail and also by Flat Branch Creek there. So any type of connection across the creek, of course, would be, you know, more onerous for construction purposes. So we'd have to build a bridge, and so that connection is likely is not likely to be made. And the MKT provides such a prominent and primary access route for pedestrian traffic, and so hence the reason for the kind of disconnection here in the sidewalk network. So. So the final two evaluation criteria, the first one here being the design adjustment would address a unique feature of the site. Staff does agree that that is the case here. It's not really prominent from this photo, but there is a fairly significant change of grade from the front of the house down. And the more important aspect, though, is that the driveway is at such a grade that to provide the appropriate cross slope on the sidewalk, there would have to be a complete reinstallation of that driveway. And I have, again, I have another graphic here. This was provided by the applicant, and I added some color coding just to make it a little more legible on your screen, because sometimes that is difficult. But of course, it shows here the driveway and the existing private sidewalk would both have to be removed. Because of grade, because of the grading required for the public sidewalk. And then also the circles are actually trees and shrubs that would be impacted. There wasn't any indication of the size of those, but from the aerial, which you'll see again, or I'm sorry, the site photo, two of the trees at least are fairly significant. I don't know that they reach the level of 20 inches in diameter, which is our definition of a significant tree, but they're verging on that. And so that would be a fairly significant impact. And again, the dashed line you see is their limits of disturbance. So that's the area that would have to be disturbed to install the sidewalk. And so you can see that the disturbance would encroach right up to the front of the house with the driveway, nearly to the front porch with the installation of the sidewalk. And then, of course, they would have to taper back and provide space for the grade change there. You can see in the sections below, it doesn't appear to be a significant amount of cut or fill. You know, I see like 0.78 feet, and then the largest one being 1.68 feet. But the issue with that there is that, you know, those existing paved areas are set at that original slope, and so in order for them to work properly and cars to be able to maneuver across them, they would have to be completely removed and reinstalled at that new grade. So it is a fairly significant consideration there. So just to recap, staff believes that the design adjustment does conflict with the comp plan goals and objectives. But staff also agrees with the design adjustment worksheet provided by the applicant that no negative impacts are anticipated for neighboring property owners. It will not create any dangerous or difficult circulation issues with pedestrians or vehicles. It does address the unique feature being the grade change from the front of the house down, and it does not pose any health, safety, or welfare impacts to the neighborhood. So the as I've done before on a similar case, the positive negative is just a little annotation there for you to know exactly which way those are kind of going up or down. So back on the plat, as a conclusion, the plat is compliant with the UDC. It would require a performance contract for the sidewalk if the design adjustment's denied, but that's just something on the bookkeeping end that we have to deal with before it goes to council. So just generally, staff can't support requests that conflict with the comm plan, hence our recommendation you'll see. But we do believe that a number of those considerations, the evaluation criteria are addressed and they don't pose any issues. So we did receive a number of letters and emails in terms of public correspondence, and I believe all of which were in support of the design adjustment, and you should have those in your staff report packet. So with that, our recommendation would be to approve the grasslands plat 17, but to deny the requested design adjustment from section 29.5.1. Alternatively, if you wish to condition the approval of the plat, the design adjustment, you could pursue a fee in lieu of construction, and we would have to actually further analyze the cost of construction before that number could be determined. But that is something that's within your authority to condition the design adjustment approval on a fee being paid for the sidewalk. So if you deem that to be necessary. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Before we move on to questions for staff, I'd like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte related to this case to please share that with the commission at this time so all commissioners have the benefit of the same information on the case in front of us. Commissioner Burns.
Thank you. I don't have any ex parte to report, but I do live in this neighborhood and have for 28 years. I'm very familiar with this street. I walk daily, and so I pass this property quite frequently.
Thank you. Any other comments on ex parte before we move on to questions for staff? Seeing none, questions for staff. Commissioner Stanton.
I seen the rendering of where the potential sidewalk would be. Why wasn't a modified curb sidewalk suggested, like right up against the curb?
I believe the issue would still remain with cross slope. It might be a little different, but it would still involve reconstructing a vast majority, if not all, of the driveway, which is the major consideration, really.
Thank you.
Commissioner Carroll?
Yeah, I'm looking back at my previous notes, and I can see that we very rarely approve sidewalk waivers. I'm wondering, in a case that was at least somewhat similar on Edgewood, if I recall, a while back, do you remember if we did fee in lieu for that or if we waived?
I don't remember an instance where we've done a fee in lieu. I know we have, but not recently.
Commissioner McMahon.
Just a point of order. They're friends of mine. They did not pay a fee in lieu of.
Commissioner Burns?
Just to, again, to elaborate, I believe we've done fee in lieu on commercial properties. In my 10 years on the commission, I don't believe we've ever done a fee in lieu on a residential.
I will second. In my 6 years, 7 years, that's just a commercial.
Any additional questions for staff? If there are none, we will open up the floor to public comment. If you can give your name and address for the record.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. I am Kevin Murphy. I'm with A Civil Group, offices at 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. I've got quite a few things to go over here. We don't have any groups here with us, so I would ask, would I be able to allow the 6-minute time limit to discuss it?
I think we can accommodate that.
Thank you. Well, I'm back here again in front of you with another design adjustment for a sidewalk. This would be my third or fourth year recently, and none of which had a payment in lieu of. And actually, one of them was a commercial property, but we did some other improvements instead to kind of help with that. But anyways, I feel that the code is broken in parts here when we're dealing with this, and I'll kind of get into that, that, you know, we have to keep coming back towards this. But my clients purchased their house that they live in now in 2000, and the adjacent property in 2019. It was a dilapidated house, and the condition that they bought, one of the conditions when they bought that was that they would tear down the house and leave it as green space. It was their deal with the previous owners. They have done that, and now they want to consolidate the two lots, so for one reason, so that it can't be developed into another house if something were to happen to them and whatnot, but also that they want to age in place here, and this old house that they're in needs some improvements and potentially some additions that might conflict with that common property line in the future. But so they have to go through the subdivision, and even though they're not subdividing, you know, they're combining the lots, this is what they're doing. This is a 100-year-old subdivision, and trying to make it conform to today's code just doesn't work, not only here, but in a lot of the other areas in the central part of town. And if the reality is that the design adjustment criteria for complying with the comprehensive plan, which states that, I guess, is interpreted as that we need sidewalks everywhere, none of these should be passed, and if that's the case. I think I personally think the comprehensive plan allows for sidewalks to also be put in, as it's noted in there, as a part of a city sidewalk gap program, and can be paid by the adjacent owners as a benefit tax bill. But so some of the existing sidewalks in this neighborhood, most of the existing sidewalks in this neighborhood are in dilapidated shape. Each of the panels are typically sawed at 4 feet. As it settles, these panels are breaking back and forth, breaking back and forth. So much of the sidewalks to the east of us are unusable. The city recently, with the Providence Road Project, constructed a sidewalk all the way down the south side of Burnham Road to Birch Road at no cost to the adjacent property owners there. I believe that was truly needed because that's where most of the apartments and multifamily, where that's just used more frequently and more often. We've got letters here from 13 plus of the neighbors and the neighborhood association, all in support of this, that they're not needed or wanted, and some of them, I believe, here tonight, they can speak upon that. As far as the payment in lieu of, just to combine these lots alone is quite a cost to a property owner. It's not really doing much of anything, let alone $14,000 that wouldn't even benefit them, would go somewhere else and do something. I will say that the house directly behind them did not was recently demolished, and I think it's just now completed building a new house, and they were not required to put in sidewalks because they didn't subdivide, did not have to go to the planning process. That's happened in a few lots in here, as well as vacant lots that have filled in over the years where they did not have to do that. But basically, that I guess that's it. I think the payment in lieu of, I think the sidewalk design adjustment is justified here, and I do not think the payment in lieu of is justified. Many of the neighbors, again, walk the they're just used to this, and if sidewalks were put throughout the neighborhood, It would have a great, you know, damaging effect on that with the.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Murphy. Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Murphy, I agree with you about the code in relationship to the older neighborhoods. And you may recall, our new code is relatively efficient at what's called greenfield new construction out of set, you know, building in cow fields. We do have a brownfield problem, an infill problem, and maybe next year, looking at our chair and looking at our liaison, we might be able to, we are aware of these issues and we're addressing them slowly. One of the utility thing downtown, things of this nature, trying to address them as we get to them. And this has been a recurring issue like the last year and a half, 2 years, as you know, you've been here. You're not the only one who's been here going, hey, this doesn't work. So we're working on it.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I'd be happy to work with you folks if in identifying these problems.
There are many brownfield issues that we'd like to address also. Thanks.
Any additional questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you.
Thank you.
There. My name is Greg Zaguda. I live at 1034 LaGrange Court, which is in the Grasslands neighborhood, and I also serve as president of the Grasslands Neighborhood Association. We submitted a letter, which you have in the packet, and I wanted to point out that our board, which consists of 7 members, met to discuss this particular issue and unanimously supported the design adjustment to not require the sidewalk. That's definitely what our board supports and would like to see. A lot of the comments that I wanted to make are in the letters from folks you've seen, but I wanted to reiterate a few of the things that I think are most important for the association. The first is the unique character of this neighborhood, which has come up a few different times, that, you know, the neighborhood is located near downtown, near campus, surrounded by the MKT trail. It's in a unique position in the neighborhood. There isn't through traffic. Through the neighborhood, the streets and the sidewalks that are there are really serving the folks who live in the neighborhood, not passing through. The neighbors have an interest in preserving the character of the neighborhood. So covenants were adopted by a number of neighbors, you know, for properties that have been developed over time and don't have a lot of consistent rules around them. And that's been done in an effort to preserve the character of the neighborhood. And the lack of sidewalks is actually part of that. And we're accustomed to sharing, you know, R1 homes with the students who live over on Burnham. The fraternities and sororities are all part of what we're accustomed to. So some of the reasons that the association supports the request and doesn't want to see a sidewalk in this location is the lack of sidewalks other places. The vast majority of the neighborhood doesn't have them. There's no continuity between the sidewalk and any others, and to the west, there's a long way to go to have any connectivity to any other sidewalk. The neighbors are accustomed to sharing the road, you know, walking, biking, and many neighbors choose to live in this neighborhood because they can walk to so many places. They make that choice knowing that there aren't sidewalks available for many of their paths through the neighborhood. The variance, you know, in this case wouldn't preclude the installation of sidewalks at some point in the future, if there were resources devoted to that. It's a big task with the lack of sidewalks, and it's not suggesting that that's desired, but granting this request wouldn't preclude that in the future. This particular request would exchange some trees, landscaping, green space for pavement that wouldn't serve any purpose. You know, neighbors don't believe it would be used by anyone to walk on. It would really just be something to walk past on the street. And this variance is really consistent with past decisions made incrementally over many, many years. And so it would make sense to grant the variance in this case as well. And in my personal experience, we built a house in this neighborhood in a lot that was already existing in 2012 and had a similar, you know, issue with our builder around, you know, a sidewalk request, which we were not required to put in place. So that's one example from my personal experience that would be similar to this. But I know there are others that have been mentioned. So in the end, it feels a little onerous to place the burden on the property owners for this sort of request to put a sidewalk in place, given all these. So I'd ask you to consider those and appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the speaker? I had a question. So you mentioned you built a house and there was a sidewalk requirement on your lot?
Our builder handled that process for us, but I remember that coming up that there was a discussion about whether a sidewalk should be put in place. We live on the cul-de-sac at the end of LaGrange Court, so it's the far left, lower left corner of the map up there. And so it would have been a little curved sliver of sidewalk. And I don't know the particulars. We didn't have to go through this process to navigate that, but we were not required to put a sidewalk in place.
Thank you. Any additional questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you.
Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Mike Alden, and my wife, Araki, and I live at 111 East Ridgely Road, which is directly east of this property. And so we're here to speak in support, or I'm here to speak in support of the design adjustment, which we've contemplated and talked about. First off, my compliments to the staff and their presentation. I thought it was really thorough and certainly gave a broad understanding, not only for all of you, but for many of us that actually live in the neighborhood too. So it's great to be able to see that. I think the photograph, or at least the slide that's up on the screen right now, tells a pretty big story. And that shows the original sidewalks that were placed in that neighborhood somewhere between 60 to 90 years ago are the ones that are located right there off of Bingham. And then they work onto Wayne Road, and that's all there are in our neighborhood, so to speak. Once you get up to Burnham, you see the other sidewalks that were constructed by the city and the great job they did with that and the stoplight there at the corner as well, too, as well as sidewalks that go down towards Grasslands Park, and then that connects us to the trail. So it's a pretty unique neighborhood. Certainly you all know the history of that neighborhood and how long it's been here, and there's some characteristics in the neighborhood itself that provide a real special experience for all of our neighbors and all of us that live there. So the first I wanted to talk about certainly was the history, which you know about. The second, which had to do with consistency. I think they're certainly important to be consistent on what we try to do and what we try to do throughout the city. But consistency also needs to be addressed, I think, on an individual basis as well, too, when you're confronting something like this. The sidewalk that's being discussed here this evening is really a sidewalk to nowhere. Right, because it ends at Mark Alexio's property to the west, and it ends at our property, and nobody's going to use it. So to be able to consider to try to make that type of investment for something that's not going to be used would certainly be a waste of money and certainly not consistent with what we're trying to achieve, I think, in the neighborhood. You know, and the final thing I wanted to mention had to do with deficiencies versus policy, right? And so If in fact we're looking at a situation of an entire neighborhood that had deficiencies throughout, I think there's certainly something to be able to discuss. But there aren't deficiencies in this neighborhood. People choose to live here because of the community feel that you have in the neighborhood itself. It's a very active neighborhood, as Greg pointed out, a lot of walkers, a lot of runners, a lot of bikers. And our neighbors are used to being able to navigate our neighborhood the way it is right now. And certainly we'd like to see it remain that way. So my point today was to be able to speak to you, to thank you for considering this, and certainly to support, and we hope that you will support the design adjustment necessary to be able to continue to keep the history and the tradition, the uniqueness of our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this speaker? I see none at this time. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I'm Donna Checkett. I live at 107 East Ridgely Road, and my husband Chris is here with me. And most of the points that obviously needed to be made have been made. I did want to provide just a little bit of perspective, and again, also start by thanking you all for your time this evening, thanking the staff for their time. It's been very professional interaction, and I appreciate that. I have learned a lot about sidewalks, and I have to say I never in my life thought that I would oppose a sidewalk, but here I am in that situation. Just a little background, you know, Chris and I met, we've lived here as adults, we've raised our family here. We bought our house about 22 years ago, and as been mentioned, the property next to us was a very small house. It was about 1,000 square feet. it just needed a lot of work and renovation. And we'd actually asked the property owner, we said, kind of one of those casual statements, hey, if you ever want to sell, let us know. And in 2019, he told us he was getting married. He moved across the street, which is what happens in the grasslands. A lot of people don't go far. And our contract actually had a provision that we would just tear the house down. We all agreed that was the thing to do. And at that time, I've also always known that we love the house. I would like to spend my final days there, but it was built in 1949. And really, at some point, you know, when we move to that stage in our life where we need walkers and wheelchairs and the realities of being old, the house won't work. So we'd like to be able to do a small addition, and I think that's when it became very apparent that part of the house right now is 6 feet from the property line. So we're going to do anything, we're going to come right up to that property line. And so to be able to combine it into one unified plat would be fantastic, and that's really what brought us to meeting with the city a couple of months ago and finding out about the sidewalk. I think all the points have been made in terms of the cost being so excessive and just really not in keeping with the neighborhood. We have had so many people stop us. We have a very large sign in one of the lots, and a lot of people have stopped and asked about it, and it's just been unanimous support to keep it as it is. People really enjoy the green space. Some of our neighbors are here in the back. They've been over there playing softball with their grandsons, and it's just a great place. We love making it part of our community. It seems like the sidewalk is excessive and really doesn't do anything but detract from the neighborhood. So I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thank you again for your consideration and for all you do for Columbia.
Thank you, Ms. Checkett. Any questions for the speaker? I see none at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional speakers on this case?
Good evening, I'm Bob Hohenstein. My wife Debbie and I live at 32 Bingham Road. Our home, our property is just north of this lot that you're talking about. I'm not gonna take a lot of your time. I'm simply gonna reinforce what everybody has already told you. We very much support wholeheartedly the design adjustment. We think it's warranted. It makes, if nothing else, common sense to do this. As Mike said before, it's kind of like that sidewalk to nowhere. It goes from Mark's property, Alexio's property, over to their property, and that's it, okay? Ms. Checkitz and her husband were going to be out thousands of dollars for this sidewalk and the work that you mentioned that needs to be done on their driveway to bring everything up to grade. And again, I appreciate it. It was a great presentation. And again, I would just ask you to please approve this design adjustment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you. Any additional speakers on this case? If there are none, we'll close public comment. Commission discussion. Commissioner Galway-Jones.
I agree that we have a problem in our code, but the code is what it is. And this is yet another request for design adjustment because there aren't any sidewalks here now. We have to start somewhere. And the grasslands is a lovely place. I've looked at homes in the grasslands. I think it's great. It's not unique in the old Southwest. In fact, I think we had a similar design adjustment request with very similar arguments about people already walk on the streets. This is the character of the neighborhood. I think it was over in College Park, maybe, or close to it, off of Rollins. So our charge as commission is to enforce the UDC unless there are such compelling reasons to deviate from it. To me, as I have said on all of these cases, our neighbors don't want it, we don't want to do it, and there aren't any sidewalks in the area, are not compelling reasons to deviate from the UDC. There's a cliff in the middle of our property is a compelling reason. So, I mean, I would like to explore, do we just not want sidewalks in established neighborhoods. If that's the case, then we need to change the ordinance. Or do we want to say, you know, you need to give the right-of-way, but we're not going to make you build it? Great, we need to change the ordinance. But the way the ordinance is today, in order to enforce it, we have to deny this waiver. And I think I know how this will go, because it's gone that way on about the last four cases. But I want to have on the record that this is a reoccurring problem, and the standard, to my mind, cannot simply be, do they want to or not? And that determines whether or not we put a sidewalk in a residential area. Because if we do that, then we'll never have sidewalks in most of the Fourth Ward. So that's my comment and thought.
Commissioner McMahon.
Since we're following form, I do support the design adjustment, and I agree with conceptually everything that Commissioner Galway-Jones has said. And that in mind, I'm going to volley this over to staff and remind them we need to get to some of these brownfield things sooner than later, because this is becoming this is a recurring theme. And you guys know that. I'm just getting that on the record for council. It is my hope that the rest of this discussion and vote go the way the last four of them did. That said, I'm done, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Stanton.
I, too, agree with my colleagues, but this is why it's in front of us. It's in front of us because it is kind of on that fulcrum either way. It's up to us to analyze the information and determine if we're going to agree with staff or not. So it is our charge to make that fulcrum lean to the left or to the right. My position is I do like the argument of the neighborhood. If there was so little sidewalk, the complexion and the texture of the neighborhood is of such that a sidewalk in this area probably wouldn't make much sense, just for that. And so I plan to support the adjustment, even though it goes against the code and all of that. But it's left to us to make that kind of on-the-spot, audible, Omaha decision at the line of scrimmage, and that's what we're going to do until we talk about this in a bigger form and addressing the code issue. And only fear I have, which I don't see it in this neighborhood, but I just don't want to get kicked in the butt later and then half the city has to pay for a sidewalk if there's some major improvements that go on, and then we let the property owner off the hook. And sidewalks do come in and say, well, this is the city's problem. That's the only thing that's bothering me. But I think in this neighborhood that probably won't happen. But I plan to support the design adjustment.
Commissioner McMahon has identified this as a brownfield, which I am interpreting as being a bit of a quagmire in the UDC. I don't consider this requirement to be a problem. I'm more with Commissioner Stanton in that I don't see us able to construct a provision that encompasses all the conditions that exist in the city. Therefore, we've created a requirement that covers some cases, but they will get kicked back to this body for decisions. And there are going to be decisions that aren't as clear. And we're on the fulcrum with some of them. So in this case, just to let the group know, we get the sidewalk to nowhere argument every time. Not every time, but we do hear that one. And for me, that's not a persuasion at this point. Because it's really going to depend on the particular circumstances of the neighborhood. If this is a location where there is development still going on, where replatting is still going to require sidewalks coming in, if building, then we do have to start somewhere. Or I do see the pieces going together. And I'm not going to support a waiver because this is a piece, and in the next 10 years, I can envision the rest of that system getting completed. In a case more like this, where it's built out, and despite the comment that a house was built and there may have been a sidewalk requirement, I can believe there was a discussion with the builder, but the fact that you didn't come through this process makes me think that no, you did not get a sidewalk waiver, because that would only have been tripped by a replatting. And I don't think I've seen a replat in Grassland. Well, okay, Ms. Burns. But not very many. So I don't see this area getting built out with sidewalks in the next 10 years. And because of that, I would support the waiver. Commissioner Burns.
Thank you. I think, and staff can correct me if I'm wrong, prior to adopting the UDC in 2016, sidewalks, because this neighborhood was so significantly developed, sidewalks were not triggered by a redevelopment. That's why Mr. Zaguda didn't have to build a sidewalk, because of the significant, I think, 90% development. I think there are probably two lots now that are still available in Grasslands. And the house, my understanding is, on Bingham that was redeveloped because it wasn't a replat, didn't have to go through the sidewalk process. So maybe that's something we should look at, because it seems like a lot of our sidewalk requests do come from older established neighborhoods, and we do hear the same arguments over and over again, that it's a sidewalk to nowhere, that people aren't going to walk on it. But I can't unhear or unread what I heard tonight and what I read in the packet, that the neighborhood is not supportive of it. There's no one here that's in support of it. And so I have to listen to what the people who live there say, and I have to understand that staff has to go through the process with the variance, but I plan on supporting this variance because I'm listening to what the neighborhood is requesting, and I agree with Commissioner Galway-Jones that we need to revisit this, but perhaps look at established neighborhoods in a different way than we look at new construction.
I live in an established neighborhood that does not have many sidewalks, and I've had neighbors leave the neighborhood for lack of sidewalks. So not all established neighborhoods are the same. Commissioner McMahon.
Just to revisit this, I was a little flippant before, and I didn't mean to be quite so flippant. Just trying to have a little fun with the evening. A couple criteria that I look at in the developed neighborhoods here originally over on Bignell or the Gibbs property over off of Edgewood is traffic. Pedestrian and automobile traffic. And in all these situations, the traffic is very low and going very slow. looking to the future, I lived in Los Angeles and I lived in Connecticut. And if you're a developer, all that stuff, we do it. You build out the sidewalk as you develop the development. That's not how they do it. They build everything and then they put the houses in. So if we have something to look at in the future. I don't want to take these good people's times or any more of ours times, but there are ways to look at infill development that are creative.
Commissioner Carroll?
Thank you. I've been conflicted in addressing this case as I was preparing for this and still now. The one thing that came up in our discussion tonight was the hope that this goes as the past four have gone. I'm not sure if we can easily categorize how the last four have gone unless we lump them into different buckets based on the surroundings. Because as I look back at our voting history, the vast majority have been turned down. And yet there are outliers to that case where neighborhoods are built out, granted. This one is not quite as strong as some of those outliers in my book, because there's no site characteristics that are strong enough to make it impossible to build a sidewalk. And because in actual fact, it's less than a block away from a sidewalk stub. Now, the flip side of this is, when we do say sidewalks to nowhere, I also look at puzzle pieces to nowhere. I also live in a city, in a part of the city with missing sidewalks here and there. And as we start to advocate for sidewalks or not, the city may fill in sidewalks, and it is a piece that the city doesn't have to build. Now, on the flip side of this, I think it is unlikely that the city would build a sidewalk in a neighborhood that asks the city not to build a sidewalk. But I don't know where the chips may fall for that now or 10 years down the road, if, as you all are aging in place, you decide that you want sidewalks after all, that may change. If new people live there later, that may change. And it is a puzzle piece that could lessen the burden of filling in a sidewalk. I don't think it will get filled in soon. I try to look for consistency in voting history, and it does look very discretionary to me, which is a place that I'm not comfortable with. I believe that I will support this because I don't think that it will get filled in.
Any additional discussion? Commissioner McMahon?
If my fellow commissioners have other questions or comments, Planner Palmer, could you put up the main screen, please? Thank you. Our staff liaison, Manager Zenner, has just reminded me that this needs to be two plats. Legal's nodding at me also. I should do the design adjustment first. I'm looking at our council, and then I'll move on to the plat. Starting in that order, in the matter of Glashland's Plat 17, final plat and design adjustment, case 2442022. Ms. Thompson, this is listed here in the negative. Should I list it in the positive?
That would be my advice, yes.
That's where I'm going. I move to approve. Stay with me, folks. The request to design adjustment from section 29-5.1. Point of order, all motions are made in the positive, so don't get double negatives in the law. I will be voting no. Thank you. See how confused I get.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion?
Just to clarify that we are, the motion indicated approval of the plat and approval of the design adjustment.
I'm sorry. I was continuing to look at deny when I was just speaking.
Just want to make sure. Thank you.
And the motion on the floor is only dealing with approval of the design adjustment.
Just the design adjustment approval. All right. Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Gawe Jones?
No.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
We have 6 yes votes and 1 no vote.
Commissioner McMahon?
Seeing no other discussion on that, I'm going to make a motion on the plat. The matter of Grassland's Plat 17, final plat, I move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. This is a motion to approve the plat. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call?
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
We have 7 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. So the recommendations for approval are supported. Thank you. That includes our cases for the evening. Any additional public comments in general? No? All right. Staff comments?
Next meeting will be September 22nd. We will start that at 5:30 with a tantalizing discussion of short-term rental. Maybe we get through another half a page. And if I am not incorrect, we are approaching commission officer elections here. If I think that will be in October. So start putting your dance cards together for who may be the lineup for next year. We do have a regular 7 p.m. meeting. It will be shorter than this, but maybe no less complicated. Hopefully it will not be as complicated. We are only discussing 3 items. The 2 items that were on this evening's agenda or broadcast at our last meeting, both were delayed due to technical issues. They both were platting actions and therefore did not require public advertising. That is why they were not formally tabled this evening. When a project does not meet technical standards by which to be brought forward, it just is held back. We do send out early property owner notification postcards to our P&Z listserv, and therefore we did have some residents here this evening for the Oakland gravel request that Mr. Palmer addressed earlier before our meeting started to explain to them the technical side of why that preliminary was not presented, but I thought I would inform you all as well. Neither of these required public hearing, and because they don't require public hearing, we don't have to go through that formal tabling process. And then the highlight item for this evening's or for next meeting's evening's actions will be the UCC text amendments, our phase 4 revisions dealing with drive-throughs, dealing with easements in the downtown, the elimination of the former C2 zoning district from the UDC, and a collection of 2 or 3 additional more minor and technical related issues for clarity purposes. Some missed section references within the code as it exists today, for example, and the like. So while you have not seen those, they are really more administrative in nature, just to ensure that we've got correct cross-referencing. The big ones, however, are the top 3 that I listed. Drive-throughs, utility easements in the MDT, and then the elimination of the C2 zoning district. We will be sending out constituency notification of those changes to allow for our consultancies and other design professionals to have an opportunity to see those in advance of the public hearing. And we have really not heard much up to this point. There are a number of our design professionals that are aware we're working on those changes. You all would have received or should have received earlier from me this week a email, just so we have our maps here as I usually do, so you have your graphic. These are the same maps we presented at our last meeting for our 2 cases, the Hinkson Creek Road and Paris Road project, which we've seen previously, and then the project here off of Oakland Gravel, an infill development proposal for single-family housing. You all would have received from me earlier this week a notification of refresher training for our Sunshine Law requirements and responsibilities of board and commission member. We typically will do some refresher training for those that are not new during our meeting at which we cover elections. At that point, we will also probably add in a couple of other topics, such as ex parte communication and the like of how we operate as a commission for our newer members, so they have an understanding of why we do the things we do. It'll give me an opportunity to maybe just eat and not talk, and you a rest from hearing me. Other than that, that is all we have for tonight. I do appreciate your participation and your comments. If you have any suggestions to resolve our issues that we discussed tonight during work session, specifically owner, please feel free to send me an email. I know Ms. Galway-Jones has already promised me a a delivery. So I will look to try to reconcile what I do receive, and then hopefully Ms. Thompson and I can work to try to come back with a potential solution based on the conversation tonight as well for you all to consider. We are moving slowly but surely to a point at which I think we will be able to prepare our memo and then hopefully be able to get a venue with council to discuss the regulations. Again, thank you very much for your attention this evening. And just to settle all fear, yes, sidewalks is in the next round. And I can also provide at a later date some of the logic behind why permitting under certain circumstances does not require sidewalk construction. Mrs. Burns' assessment is correct. If you're not platting and you do meet criteria, you generally are not required to install a sidewalk with a building permit. So what has happened in the grasslands was not done illegally. It was actually done within the context of the code. With that, I will turn it over to you all.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Commissioner McMahon.
I have a point for our guest this evening, and legal could help me out on this. We approved the design adjustment 6-1. Am I correct in my statement that if council were to overturn us, they must have a supermajority?
That is correct. If they want to go in the opposite direction.
All right. For our listeners out there, normally, most often, council goes with us. They are not required to do that. They can do with us. They can go against us at 4-3. Because we voted 6-1 the way we did, they must now vote 5-2. Let's have 75%. Is that correct? I'm getting some nodding. Just so you all know that when it goes to the next level. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Stanton.
I would like to commend my colleagues up here that I think they were approaching these anomalies in a good fashion, and that we need to take note, which seems like everybody is doing, as far as where we see the hiccups in the code. And I do not want us to get discouraged that sometimes we have to be a tiebreaker, and a lot of the things that come before us don't necessarily lean on the technical merits purely. And it's up to us to use our logic and our background to make those decisions. So keep pushing forward and keep taking notes so that we can adjust the code accordingly.
I like that use of logic. I would say that we're more logical than subjective in this group. So thank you, Mr. Zenner, for sticking with us through our discussions. We were coming around. With that, if there's a final motion, Mr. McMahon.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
Second, I'm going to give it to Commissioner Gawade Jones on that one. We're adjourned.